Welcome to this week's episode of Time Added On. Forest entertain Brentford in front of the cameras on Sunday, the start of a three-game run that Steve Cooper would have been targeting a strong return from. We'll look back at obviously all the action and all the talking points, plenty of talking points from Sunday's game, and look ahead to the visit to Palace this upcoming weekend. But first of all, Tom, are you well? Did you enjoy the weekend? We had a hell of a journey yesterday, a nice 13-hour round journey back with a five-year-old in tow as well. It was interesting Sunday, mate, wasn't it? I enjoyed it. It was good. I enjoyed the match. Yeah. Everyone's moaning about the quality of football, but I actually thought it was a good match, but we'll come on to that.
Yeah, it was a decent Sunday. It was a nice Pizza Express trip.
Frankie and Benny's. No, you got that in early. You got that. We're not on commission. I feel like we missed a trick here. We are not on commission. But no, it was good. It was a good Sunday, good weekend in reality. Plenty to go into. I mean, let's talk about the game. Let's get into it. We walked away from the game, didn't we, yesterday? And we both said that, or you said that we'd have very different opinions on this match. And I think you might be right. I think we might have very different views on this. So I suppose, firstly, kick us off, what are your overall thoughts on the game and the result yesterday?
Yeah, I think my opinion's probably calmed down a little bit since.
You weren't raging.
No, I wasn't.
You were probably
raging.
Right to a point. We had a good little chat over Trent Bridge, didn't we? But yeah, go on.
Yeah, heat of the moment and all that.
Heat of the moment.
No, I think, you know, you're coming away from the game. I think for me, you're still coming away from the game slightly disappointed. I think we were looking at this month and this next three games in terms of the points that you'd want Forest to pick up and kick on from what was a very difficult spell of games. And, you know, I'm including the Burnley home game in this as well. And you kind of, you know, you're looking at these games and you're kind of wanting to kick on and top off what has been a solid start to the season for Forest. And it was slightly disappointing in that respect. Obviously, yes, they played well in spells. And, you know, the circumstances of what happened in the second half with the red card obviously will have an impact on people's opinions of whether that was a good point or not, obviously. I think some of the disappointment for me was I didn't feel necessarily that Forest had to play like they did after they got the red card, and I get your point that you'll probably come on to around fitness and that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, look, it's a really difficult one to gauge in these circumstances because of the circumstances I said with regards to the red card. And yeah, I mean, there is an argument that it's a very good point in the end, and Steve Cooper said obviously we'd be happy with the point than them. But obviously I'm looking at it in terms of the bigger picture, and it's just a little bit disappointing for me in terms of not coming away with the 3 points. But, you know, look, they've got an opportunity to kind of tackle that in the games coming up afterwards as well, and change that view, because this could look like a very good point in the bigger scheme of things. But at this moment in time, I just, you know, was hopefully, you know, really wanting 3 points from this game. And it was never going to be an easy game. It's Brentford still, even though they've not had probably, you know, the best starts of the season by their standards, but, you know, that they're, you know, still having a decent start, albeit maybe just slightly indifferent to what they would usually expect.
Yeah, we talked about that, didn't we, last week, in terms of the Brentford side that we were going to face. They had a few injury problems as well, and I think maybe that, obviously, they were off the back of a really poor result last weekend against Everton. They had a few injury problems. I think Forest probably looks at this one. There are probably a few fans guilty of looking at this one going, this had home banker written all over it. I don't think the Premier League's that easy. But I think that's probably where a little bit of the disappointment stems around, in terms of it was a golden opportunity to get 3 points on the board. I think it was a really weird game for me yesterday. And someone says now in our WhatsApp group after the game, didn't they? And, you know, what's everyone's thoughts of that? And I think the way I'd probably sum it up is, yeah, you know, good point overall in the end. Take it, move on. Plenty to be positive about. I think, obviously, you know, a few things that Forest will look at and they'll know that they need to do better at. But I think overall, you know, it probably broke down into 3 or 4 different stages this game. I thought Forest started off really well, lost their way a bit, came back into it, and therefore looked like they were, you know, probably the strongest side, and then had a bit of a wobble towards the end of the match. It did ebb and flow. It went from being quite a dull game to being quite a spectacle in that second half, and probably for all the wrong reasons from a Forest point of view. But I do think, you know, you talked about the circumstances there of Nyakati's red card. I think the way that second half, or the early stage of that second half played out, I do think it's a good point on the face of it, and plenty of moments that maybe went for Forest. We'll talk about the red card, whether we thought that did or didn't go against Forest. But there was lots of things there that probably, I think, went in Forest's favour in that second half that meant coming away with a point was possible. I think certain individuals played really well, and we'll come on to talk about those. I think certain individuals probably left themselves a little bit wanting on the pitch yesterday, which, you know, could have consequences for Palace. But overall, good point. I suppose the thing that probably took us all by surprise yesterday was the starting 11. We anticipated that Steve Cooper might go with a back four, and we said, didn't we, in the week that we felt Steve Cooper would go for the 4-3-3 that suited Forest so often last season. But we probably expected the front three to feature Morgan Gibbs-White. We talked about Hudson-Odoi and Awoniyi. The midfield three, you know, we agreed with, and we thought Mangala, Sangare and Dominguez was the three. I suppose the one that we didn't expect was, or the two that we didn't expect was Nyakate at left back and Murillo making his debut at centre half. What did you make of that team when it came out?
Well, I think, you know, Nyakate at left back, he's obviously chosen him instead of Toffolo. The injuries has played a factor in that one. Obviously, we probably would have played Olaena there if he was fit, and obviously we didn't know he wasn't. And Nyakate's going in. You know, it's not the first time he's played left back. He played left back quite a lot in Germany as well, so it's not necessarily a surprise that he can play there. I suppose just slightly surprising that he's obviously a lot more comfortable still and has played mainly centre-back for Forest, and kind of thrown in at left-back for this one. And we don't know how late that was, whether it was worked on during the week, whether the Olaena injury was known well before that he was going to be ruled out for this one. But obviously that one was slightly surprising, and we'll, you know, I'm sure we'll come on to speak about Harry Toffolo and how he did when he came on, because,
absolutely,
you know, I thought he did a good job. And obviously, you know, we all know a manager back in the day that used to talk about square pegs in round holes or whatever it is. So, you know, that plays a little bit of a factor into it. And then Murillo was the surprise, I think. And, you know, it was good. We knew that Steve Cooper was probably going to start blooding in some of the new signings over a period of time. I think a lot of people maybe just hadn't even thought about potentially the new centre-backs coming in anytime soon because of their ages and how young they are, and the fact that we do have other senior options at centre-back who are fit. So probably just hadn't even thought that that was a major possibility so soon, albeit we knew that Murillo came to the club with a high ceiling and, you know, very highly regarded. And I think I don't think he did any harm to himself, I should say, because I think he performed well. I think after a bit of a shaky start in terms of maybe giving the ball away a couple of times, I actually thought he looked very steady. And for such a big lad, he's actually quite pacey at centre-back, which we all know is much needed at this level, because it was the one thing that caught Forest out a lot last season. Mm.
I think up top, everyone was surprised that Morgan Gibbs-White was left out. My five-year-old was not happy that Morgan Gibbs-White was on the bench. But you can understand it. I think it was good to see. I think we were pleased in a way, weren't we, that Steve Cooper had the confidence in the other players in the squad to leave Gibbs-White out. And Gibbs-White, look, he played all summer for England under-21s. You know, the lad probably just needs a bit of a rest. You've got to manage him carefully. And I think, you know, Steve Cooper would have always planned to have brought him on, which he did, obviously, in that second half, maybe in different circumstances to what he would have expected. But I think it's a real positive that Gibbs-White didn't start the game, but made an impact when he came on. And I think that might be the way that you know, I don't think Gibbs-White would be left out too often, but they probably will have to manage his workload over the next couple of months.
Yeah, we were well aware he was on the bench because the pub we were in, there was a Brentford fan there, and I think he must have mentioned it about 5-6 times in excitement that Morgan Gibbs-White was on the bench and not starting the game. I think for me, Morgan Gibbs-White it's one of those difficult ones, because I have criticised him in the starting few weeks, but he is still probably, if not right at the top, Forest's most creative player still. He's just playing a slightly different role maybe to where he had been last season. And I think he might actually detract from being this out-and-out 10 that we know him to be, and be more of like a a number eight, if you like, and maybe wander around that center of the park a little bit more, actually, than being as far forward as maybe people kind of expect him to be and shape him in your squad to be. And I think he'll need to be as well in terms of kind of the flexibility of him as a player to make sure that he remains a consistent feature in the team. So it's an interesting one. I do agree that I think he needed a bit of a breather. Now, whether this was the game that you did it in, that is, you know, everyone's kind of... you know, that's up to them to decide whether it was right or not. But I get the feeling that he definitely wants to play him against Palace. So I think he'll definitely be a part of that starting 11. And he obviously thinks he might play an important role at Selhurst Park. So he obviously felt like this was an opportunity in terms of also starting Alanga and Hudson-Odoi alongside Awoniyi that might fit. So, look, it was a bit of a surprise to people. I think it was probably more of a surprise because we all have it in our head that Steve Cooper's got his favourites, if you like, in Yates, Worrell, Morgan Gibbs-White. But actually, some of them down to injury. But, you know, he's obviously showing his hand in terms of, look, there's these new guys in or there's other players that are knocking on the door. So everyone has to be giving their all every single week. And that's what some people were shouting for. They were shouting for that hands to be shown. They were shouting for those cards to be shown and that those players know that there is competition. So he's done that and now it's up to those players to step up. But I think he also did well when he came off the bench. So, you know, he was very much, albeit he didn't get the goal or assist, he played a large part in getting it to where it needed to be on the pitch for that all to happen.
He's proper team player, isn't he? And so his reaction as well when he made the tackle towards the end of the match was unbelievable, wasn't it? And that just sums up Morgan Gibbs-White in reality in terms of the player that he is. What playing for Forest means to him, you can see at the end of the match as well in terms of the appreciation that the fans were giving him. He loves it here and that, you know, he doesn't go amiss, that type of performance when he came on. He was a proper, probably sacrificed his attacking intent to go and play as a, you know, in that midfield two or three, if you like, at that time. So absolutely brilliant when he came on for very different reasons this time around. But yeah, I agree with you. I think he'll start at Selhurst Park and be a big player for Forest on the Saturdays, you would expect. And I think who probably drops out. You know, I mean, let's talk about the players who played in Morgan Gibbs-White's place, obviously. Hudson-Odoi and Alanga, I thought they were very different, very contrasting in their performances. Hudson-Odoi continues to just impress me. I thought he was brilliant again yesterday. Really sharp, really lively on that left-hand side, kind of cutting in. Looked a real threat. I think he's still trying to gain that confidence. Obviously, you know, got the goal the other week against Burnley. But, you know, I think there's still, you know, he's got a bit to work on in terms of that confidence and just getting match sharpness, isn't it? Because he hasn't played for so long. I think on the other side, Alanga for me has shown real glimpses of quality this season and you know, a real live wire and looks like he's got a good end product about him. I think he probably had one of his weaker games yesterday. I was a little bit disappointed with some of his end products, got himself in some dangerous positions and either took a touch too many or just made the wrong option. I think Forest in that first half, weren't they? They started the game really well. They played some really good stuff. I was actually really impressed with the way that Forest went about things in that first half. But it was just that final killer touch, wasn't it? It's just the wrong decision or the final ball just wasn't quite right. Forest just weren't cutting through. And I think Alanga in that was probably the one out of the two that probably had a weaker performance, let's say.
Yeah, I think what people have been shouting for the last year since we've been in the Premier League is to have a bit more control in midfield. And we seem to have that. I mean, some of the performances that we've had from Dominguez, we call him Rodriguez, Dominguez and Sangar, and Mangala. I thought was fantastic. But what that also means is when you've got a bit more control and you're having a bit more of the ball than you did last year, is that you need to make that count. And that's where Forrest afforded it. This is my concern at the moment. Not concerned that I think Forrest will be fine before you start going miserable Tom's back. I think Forrest will be fine. I think this next month for me is vital. So, so important in terms of starting to see all of this coming together. And it is that final ball and getting those goals, which at the moment is the thing that's lacking. And, you know, out of the two players you just said there, Hudson-Odoi, You know, I was surprised when you said that you'd heard some critics of his in the stands yesterday and in the concourse, because I actually thought he had a really good game. He looked a threat just without having that final delivery again, and those two are going to be so important to it. And Elanga, I agree with you. I thought it was one of his weaker games. My concern with him is that I don't want him to be the player that I'm starting to think he is, which is an impact sub, which I know might seem really harsh this early on in the season. And I might, you know, my opinion might be being skewed because maybe I have slightly more empathy for Callum Hudson-Odoi's situation in comparison to Elanga, albeit Elanga also hasn't played a lot of football on a consistent basis since Ten Hag was at Man United. So he is also kind of in that same boat, but maybe I'm just, you know, my empathy skewing slightly more than the other. But I thought there was an opportunity for Elanga yesterday where there was times where the ball got to him and he seemed really hesitant to run at their defence. And for someone who one of his best attributes is to run at a defence and his speed is unbelievable, there was like almost he was thinking too much. You know, maybe it was part of the tactics that they wanted a bit more of a considered approach rather than doing that. But, you know, we've seen it time and time again from Steve Cooper's side where he does like a player with that pace to just run at the defence and then put in that ball and put it in a dangerous area. And there was, you know, there was a lot of hesitancy there. And you know, it was mentioned on Match of the Day too. And I agree, Steve Cooper mentioned it in his interview. You know, their left back, Hickey, got yellow carded so early on in the game. So that should be an absolute dream for Elanga to run at him and, you know, either he gets another yellow or, you know, the left back is, you know, a bit more cautious at putting in a challenge. So therefore, it should give you a bit more of an opportunity to do what you need to do. And it was just a bit of a frustrating game for him. And, I have liked what I've seen from Elanga in moments and in some big moments in those really difficult games at the start of the season. But just like everyone else, this run of games is an opportunity for him to show a bit more. And so, you know, naturally the judgment is going to be a little bit harsher.
Yeah, I agree. I think in the games I've seen so far this season, I'm confident and hopeful that obviously that it will click in the final third. I see, you know, albeit on a smaller sample size, somewhat Hudson-Odoi, but we've seen enough of Elanga in games to know that he can be a real threat and a real dangerous player. Yeah, you talk about impact off the bench. You could argue his impact off the bench at Chelsea. You know, he was impactful off the bench at Chelsea, but he played more than 45 minutes that day. So he's more than just the last 15, 20-minute player. I do agree with you that it's a confidence thing with both of them. And I think if they can get themselves a run of games, there will be changes, whether it's Hudson-Odoi starts on the bench or Elanga or Gibbs-White or, you know, what have you. Yeah, there will be changes and they will have to learn to maybe rotate or in that final third. But I think if, you know, once it starts to click for Forest in that area of the pitch, I think there's enough talent there. And I've seen enough so far in the games to see that I think Forest will be dangerous. I think where it's starting to click for Forest and where I thought Forest were probably their most impressive this weekend was in the centre of the park. And that trio of Dominguez, Mangala, Sangare, there's a lot to say there. I'm still sleep deprived after yesterday, but it looked really good to me, that trio of players. I thought they played some good stuff. I thought they got into good positions. They were actually passing it quite well between the three of them, you know, playing some nice triangles. And I think what was interesting in terms of that setup, that it was actually in comparison to Man City the week earlier, it was Sangare who was playing more in a more advanced role with Dominguez playing alongside Mangala as a pivot. And I thought he had probably his best game in a Forest shirt by quite a distance, didn't he, Sangare, yesterday? I thought he looked really good. He's very different. And people were moaning about Sangare playing in a 10. He wasn't playing a 10. He was playing in a midfield three, but just slightly more advanced than the other two. But I thought he was brilliant. And there was the time in the first half where I think, you know, Brentford, I think there's three or four Brentford players tried to take the ball off him, and he beat all three of them. And I thought that was brilliant. And that showed the strength, the technical ability that he's got. His ball retention was good yesterday. And he got the ball moving forward. And I thought it was a really strong performance from him. Mangala, we know that we're a big fan of on this pod, you more so than anyone. Again, I thought he went about his business really well and just did what he did. And we'll talk about Dominguez shortly in terms of his goal that he got. But I think just as a midfield three, that now is kind of, we've got a basis there, and it's a strong base, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're beating yourself up a little bit with the name confusion. I think you're onto something, if anything. Let's call him Mangarez. The trio is Mangarez.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go.
I like that.
Yeah,
let's go. Well, yeah, I mean, Mangala, I've touched on him first because there was still a bit of criticism about him on Twitter. I was really surprised. I thought he had another good game. I think he's getting stronger and I think he looks more assured and dynamic and add something, and I don't think the other two necessarily have stronger game if he's not in that midfield alongside him. I thought he was really good in there. I liked the three altogether, as you said. Dominguez for me is the real deal. I think I've seen enough already. I mean, obviously I know it's a very, very small sample size again, but I really like what I'm seeing from him, and he's so passionate, so fired up. I liked quoting roughly here, but yeah, I saw someone on Twitter say Dominguez is the Froiler we were expecting, but actually we can see what he does. And you know, for
yeah, Froiler, yeah, ran that right down my throat. Yeah,
yeah. People say Froiler, oh, he's a good player, but you just don't see what he does. Well, I like to see when people are good, and I can see it with Dominguez. He's you know, he's done a good job, and I think he suits us a lot. And I think he's you know, he doesn't score many goals, so let's not expect loads of goals from him either. But, you know, I think he will be, he's just a live wire in that midfield. And at this level, he doesn't, you know, it doesn't faze him.
He did look good.
And Sangare, I agree. I think it was his better game so far. Again, very small sample size, so harsh to kind of criticise him before that. But, you know, he was taking on players. He was spreading the ball out. Yeah, he was a little bit more advanced than the other two, and I found that interesting myself. But I think it kind of worked for him at times. Yeah, he's not your... He wasn't playing a 10, as people maybe were saying. But, you know, I actually thought he did all right in that role that he played, albeit, you know, he's not the kind of natural kind of player that we'd have usually think, you know, in terms of that Morgan Gibbs-White, in terms of being in that 10, but I liked the three altogether. And I thought they played well. Like I said already, the thing that they offered was just more control. You know, it's just more control. Like, you know, we're coming out of the game again, and you know, this is where my frustration is saying, I don't want Forest to become a team that, you know, are looking more controlled but can't score goals, because there were teams down there at that end of the table last year that looked assured in games but couldn't score goals. I don't want Forest to become one of those teams. So, you know, the hope is that it starts to click. But it is nice having a bit more control in games, because Forest lacks that a lot last season. Yeah. So it's a positive to take.
Definitely. Interesting. Paul Taylor wrote a really good article today, I think it was, in The Athletic, just summarising where Forest are now versus, you know, this time last year. You've got to remember, this time last year, Forest had just been humped 4-0 away at Leicester, and their holding midfielders that night were Lewis O'Brien and Cech Coyote. You think where Forest have come now, 12 months on, and they, you know, we're talking about Forest starting a game with the three players that we started with yesterday. There is definitely more control in there. I echo everything that you said about Dominguez. I thought he has looked brilliant. In the two games he has played so far, I thought he was absolutely outstanding yesterday. Probably man of the match for me, Dominguez yesterday. He was unreal. Proper, just gets stuck in. He's a good ball player. Took his header really well for the goal. He looks good. And I just think they balance each other. I think they complement each other. I think I don't get the criticism on Mangala. I think you need him in there doing what he does, turning the ball over, literally, you know, getting passes away, making Forest tick. You know, I just think he's so underrated, Mangala. And I think those three, look, Forest have got good midfield players on the bench still to come back in. No one's saying that there isn't a role for Yates, is obviously. Danilo will come back from injury soon, hopefully. You've still got the young lad Santos as well to come in, who everyone was raving about when we signed him. So Forest have got plenty of options there off the bench. And all of those players that we've just mentioned will have a role to play. But I think the three that we've got in there now, if they stay fit, they have kind of got the shirt and it's theirs to lose, you would think. And it was good. I think first off, the midfield for Forest was definitely the plus one. I think Forest won that first half. Obviously didn't score, had the disallowed goal for offside. But I think Forest would have gone in at half time a lot happier of the two sides, albeit disappointed. They didn't take advantage of that dominance. But I mean, second half was a complete polar opposites in the opening stages. It wasn't good, was it? Forest came out of the half time break, looked poor, making silly mistakes, just kept on giving the ball away, couldn't get hold of it. And when they did get hold of it, they just gave it straight back, playing ourselves into trouble. I think it was really topped off by the Turner mistake, wasn't it, in terms of the error that he made. He didn't fill me with much confidence yesterday, Matt Turner, and that's not something I've said at all this season. He's been really, really good. And I think we've almost said every week on this pod, Matt Turner has been one of Forest's best players. Yesterday was a very different, it was like his twin was playing yesterday, because he made me nervous almost every occasion when the ball was at his feet. You can see what Forest are trying to do now, can't you? They're trying to play out a little bit more from the back. They believe that they've got the centre-backs and the full-backs to be able to do that. Matt Turner yesterday, he looked like he couldn't cope with that ball being passed back to him. And the one where they, where we nearly got caught out and arguably could have been a penalty for Brentford. Sky were obviously going down that line. Not huge shouts, if I'm honest, from Brentford. But having watched it back, it looks a penalty to me. Absolutely, it looked a penalty. But he wasn't at his best, was it? There was a couple of errors. And I just wonder now, we've got a very strong keeper sitting on the bench. Does Steve Cooper think about maybe changing things up for Palace away, which would be really harsh for me on Matt Turner, but because, as I say, Matt Turner has been brilliant. But if an outfield player has a performance the way that Matt Turner played yesterday, it'd be substituted, it'd be swapped next match. You've seen it already this season, haven't we, in terms of McKenna, Worrell's been in and out. Players have a bad game, you're out. And I just wonder whether Matt Turner now might be looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, they were so slow coming out in that second half, and to the point where I actually thought they'd completely changed the tactics and they were going counter-attacking. But I think they were just rubbish.
Fair point.
And I think they needed some of that Barocca that you had yesterday, Chris, actually. So yeah. You flying up the Trent end.
They didn't have the half-time oranges, did they?
No, absolutely not. So, yeah, I mean, they started off so slow. And, yeah, I mean, Matt Turner, he's been brilliant at the start of the season. I'm not going to quite jump down his throat as quickly as other people have in terms of, oh, here we go, here's the opportunity. Throw him out. Like, we've just all been waiting for it to happen. And we're all like, yeah, go on, throw him in the fire. Like, I don't think that's the way it should be. Look, we all know it's a competition for places. The one position I kind of probably am more reluctant, and we have seen it with Steve Cooper, because he did it with Samba and Horvath in that championship season. But, I'm a little bit more reluctant around the goalkeeper, because you start changing that up too much, you really are, I think you're asking for a little bit of trouble. There's all the big debate at the moment around Arsenal and Stockdale and David Raya and stuff like that. And I do think goalkeeper is where you would like some more consistency. So I wouldn't be quite throwing him out of the team. I don't think he deserves that yet. He had an off day, 100%. And there were times where he touched the ball and I was like, fella, what are you doing here? Like, stop messing about. He's put his hand up, already though. Straight after the game, he's gone, I've had a bit of a shocker. And I respect that. And he'll be going into training, trying to make sure that doesn't happen again in the weekend coming. Now, if it becomes consistent, then yeah, you go, we can't afford to be dropping points like this in games in the Premier League. You just can't. So, that's something for Steve Cooper to think about in the future. But I don't think that's a question for right now in terms of whether you change him. It was a penalty, or should have been a penalty, I should say. I think in terms of his, he's basically gone to try and play the ball very last minute, hasn't he? And completely messed it all up. And actually, eventually, really, he's just ended up kicking their player down.
Look, the Turner thing, I do agree. I'm just putting it out there. I would personally like to see Matt Turner retain his place and given another chance at Palace and to see how that one goes. But I just... the squad strength and the depth and the competition is so that might be the way Steve Cooper works it. And then he just goes, you're no different to one of my centre halves. If you have a bad game, I've got a fella here I can put in, and then likewise that might happen to him. So
he did the same in the championship, didn't he? Where you know, I feel like you know, Samba made that big error in the home game, I think, against Stoke, and
Stoke were on for
Horvath. But I almost always felt like he was waiting for Horvath to make an error, or you know, there'd be a reason for him to be redropped, and then Samba came back in, like he made his point. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't think it's a like for like, if you like. But I've always been of the opinion since we'd signed Vlachodimos that he would potentially become the first choice. And obviously that seems to be the noise that we've heard in the media. But I just think it would be harsh, really harsh right now.
I think at this moment,
regardless of whether you think he's going to be first choice, it shouldn't be a waiting game of, ha, you've made an error, so let's drop you. Like, at the end of the day, he's done a good job so far at the start of the season, and right now he is number one, and he deserves to remain number one. So, albeit, I think Vlachodimos might become number one. If Turner carries on like he had before that game, I'm quite happy as it is. So, we've just got to wait. I just think, let's see what happens in the next couple of games. I'm sure Steve Cooper and his staff will make a judgment call on that.
Near Carty red card was what followed literally almost instantly after the Turner error. I don't think it's tough, this one, right? Well, it's not in my opinion, it's not tough, but a surprise with, I can understand the crowd reaction. We're at the Trent end, right? We're at the back of the Trent end, so you know, opposite end of the pitch. The first yellow card in the first half was a definite yellow card. I mean, he's taking him off at the kneecaps. You know, it was a really bad challenge. Trying to get his teammate out of trouble, I get that, but it was a really bad challenge, definite yellow. Having seen the Niakati one back, I can see why he's given a yellow card. Now, I can understand Steve Cooper saying, well, you know, the referee didn't, you know, he didn't have to give it. If he hadn't given a yellow, no one would have batted an eyelid at it. But my counter to that would be, Niakati's given the referee a decision to make there. And I think he's gone right down the back of his heel. And I think it's a yellow card. Right, regardless of whether it's a second yellow, it's a yellow card, and he's off. And I think it's disappointing because I actually thought, you know, he was doing all right, as I said earlier on. And it was disappointing because at that point, Forest were, albeit they'd had a shaky start to the second half, but if they could have composed themselves with 11 men on the pitch, I still fancy Forest to maybe get something from the game, or win the game, sorry. But it was a stupid tackle, and I think, you know, Steve Cooper didn't seem too miffed with Niakati, and he got a handshake as he went off the pitch. And I can understand that to a point, but there is a bit of disappointment there for me. I thought it was a couple of rash challenges at his point.
Yeah, I agree. Boring, I know.
But I don't understand what the crowd, I mean, the referee, we don't like referees. We don't like referees. And well, we've been harshly treated, but...
Yeah, the crowd's going to react that way. I think for me, like you said, we're the opposite end of the pitch, right? We're in the Trent end, so... Hard for us to see, but when it was live, I thought that's got a yellow card all over it.
Yeah,
and obviously we already knew he was on a yellow. I can remember turning around to you. I think I said he's in trouble here. Well, you might have said it to me. Yeah. I can't remember.
I'll say it to you. I'm just going to say it to you.
I like taking credit.
I know you do.
Yeah, you said it to me, and then people by me were like, "What? What's that about?" And I was like, "That's a yellow, and therefore, you know, we all know what the rules are." So I'm always of the opinion of, and I can remember saying it, I say it a lot last season about the likes of Joe Worrell, you know, if you allow the referee to have a chance to make that kind of decision, then you've done something wrong. And I get it, you know, like people might go, oh, he's slightly unlucky. And I think that's what Jermaine Jenas said on Match of the Day too. He's slightly unlucky, but he's unlucky. Yeah, that unfortunately he makes the kind of contact that he does, but he nibbled like two or three times to try, and he's behind him. You know, it's not like he's in front of him. You know, he's behind him, so naturally, you probably are going. There's going to be a point of contact, and that contact is probably more unlikely to be the ball than what you think it is in your head. So, I get it, but he just has to be really careful, and he's been daft. And I didn't really get the protests about it. You know, we can all sit here and say, well, if he doesn't give it, we're not talking about it. But I don't think there's anything wrong with giving that as a yellow card. I get on another day, maybe another referee might not give it as a yellow. It's one of those, but that's the football game. You know, we're all talking about VAR decisions and stuff like that. Football's still an opinion game, but I would say, you know, take Forest fans and Brentford fans out of it. I would say at least 80% of people would give that as a yellow card.
But yeah, great. I suppose it was insult to injury, right? Therefore, the free kick is taken from that spot, and Brentford go 1-0 up. I'd say the goal itself, obviously, look, we've talked about Turner, but I don't think Turner covered himself with glory in that goal either. But he's got to be helped out by his defenders, isn't he? The back line don't drop, and it's a free header for them. And they're not scoring easier headed free kick than that. So really tough. And you just felt at that moment, having gone down to 10 men, conceded straight after, it looked a long way back for Forest at that point. I've got to admit, I thought there'd be a response. I knew there'd be a response, but it's tough. It was tough to see them get back into it. But I mean, instantly got back into it. And to say, Toffolo, Gibbs White come on and play their part in the goal, in the build up. Absolute brilliant ball, if you like, from Toffolo to find Dominguez. And look, really good header. But keeper's got to do better, and the keeper's almost treated it like it's going over, and he's just not bothered jumping for it or diving for it, and it's looped into the top corner. But we've talked about Dominguez, chuffed that he got his goal. Keeper would be absolutely screwing. But at that moment, what, 25 minutes left? The game changed again. As I said earlier, the game almost flipped. And from that moment onwards, after Forrest scoring, there's probably a 10-15 minute spell after that where Forrest were on top. Forrest looked like the better side. You know, it's almost like that shock of going behind and going down to 10 men almost, breathed a little bit of life into the performance, because they were good, weren't they, after that moment? They were really good. So, I suppose that's where Forest didn't capitalise in that spell. But you could understand maybe they were kind of caught in two minds in terms of trying to protect the 1-1 or going for the killer instinct. Cooper made, what I would say, is throughout that second half, the substitutions that he made obviously was at part to shore things up. But, I mean, he still went for it, right? We finished with Origi and Wood on the pitch at the end of the match to try and, I suppose, give us a platform at the top end of the pitch to get a result. But, I just thought Forest looked the better side after that. And I think it really helps. We've talked about the Gibbs-White challenge. I think everything in that. What I liked about the second half as well is when there were spells where, even in that bit where I'm saying Forest were on top, there were spells where Brentford were able to get hold of the ball and obviously play it round Forest. And there were spells where Forest did need to dig in and really kind of add that little bit of resolve. A lot of people were saying on Twitter again that the atmosphere wasn't the best. It wasn't the best it's been. I thought the fans were brilliant. At those times where Forest needed a little bit of help, I thought the crowd got right behind them again. And Steve Cooper was, geeing the fans up as well. I thought the crowd was good. And that, the togetherness, the team spirit, everything that we've talked about Forest for the last 2 years, it was evident there in that little spell for me in terms of that, the reaction to the Gibbs-White challenge. Ari Toffolo absolutely giving his all when he came on and putting in, I think, a brilliant performance. We'll talk about Toffolo specifically in a minute because I really want to talk about him. But I just thought that, I thought everything was good in terms of that almost that side of Forest that you've just come to expect now.
Yeah, I think there was a few players that G'd the crowd up. Gibbs White, Sangari even did at one point. I think he comes across, and I've heard that he was at PSV as well. Saw some people saying, "Oh, it doesn't look like he's that bothered." I think he's generally a quiet, calmer in the background character. Not necessarily his way of playing, but in the changing room, apparently he is a bit more of one of the quieter characters. That's what he was at PSV. But I think, he was G'ing the crowd up as well. And I liked seeing that myself. There's also this thought, I think fans have been a bit harsh on themselves. I've heard it, I think, for all the home games, to be quite honest. Obviously, I wasn't at the Sheffield United one, unfortunately. But, I've heard that noise for every game so far. But I think it comes from that, our reputation in terms of our fan base across the media as well is kind of exceeding our kind of, what we're expecting as well at times. You're not always going to have these huge displays, and you're not always going to have constant noise. That's just not generally.
I think the end of
British
last season,
football.
Though. No, but I think the end of last season distorted that as well, didn't it? Mm. Like, you think of those last three games: Brighton, Southampton, Arsenal. Can't be like that every week.
No. And the start of last season when we played the likes of Fulham and Bournemouth, and people go, "Well, yeah, see what happened there. We lost." But I think, you know, we didn't lose those games because of the atmosphere. We lost the games because we were rubbish. But, you know, I think...
So bluntly put. Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's not always going to be at 100. You know, it's not, it isn't, it just naturally won't. But I did like towards the end of the match, it's, you know, we gave a bit of what we know that we're good at. And there'll be games coming up that we know are so important or going to be difficult, and the fans will be well on top of it as well. But yeah, I mean, I like some of what I saw after they conceded the goal. I think the goal is that Forest scored is, it's a good goal. I think it's a brilliant ball by Gibbs White to Toffolo, and I think the ball from Toffolo is fantastic. I mean, Steve Cooper went as far to say he thinks he's the best crosser at the football club after the game, which surprised me that he said that. I mean, I like Toffolo, and I like what I've seen in him at times when he's played. To kind of call him out as the best crosser at the club, I mean, I'm not in training sessions, so he obviously sees a bit more from me, but it was a good ball in. And I mean, if anyone, we're talking about number ones being dropped at the moment. I mean, Flecken, I've heard and seen enough from Brentford fans to go that he's not necessarily high up on the Christmas card list at the moment from their group of fans. So he should be more of the two goalkeepers from that game, albeit Turner didn't have a great game at all. He'd be the one, I think, out of the two would be most likely to be dropped at this moment. Well, that's if they've got another option. But yeah, I mean, I liked what I saw. There were some periods of dominance. I think, obviously, you know, what I spoke about at the start about being a little bit disappointed. I think there were subs that kind of made us a little bit more solid in our shape. And then there was an attempt to try and go a bit more attacking with some of the players that came on. And it all, you know, some of the changes I thought slightly disrupted the way that they were playing at times, but I also understand it's you're down to 10 men and fitness and things like that. You could see players going down with cramp and all that kind of stuff. So again, it's a really difficult one, and I'm not, you know, on the sidelines, and I don't know where fitness levels are generally in the week and things like that. But, you know, there were times where I just thought you don't have to, you know, banking, you know, straight in your box, but obviously that pressure was always going to come from Brentford as well. So they did well in that respect in terms of seeing the game out. The thing will always be, whether you're 11 or 10 men, is Forest just need to show a bit more cutting edge in that final third, yeah. And that final ball.
I think, just to touch on Toffolo there, I think what I liked about Toffolo is he's not had a look all season. As he's been on the bench a couple of times, he's not really had much of a sniff. You know, no one's really talking about Harry Toffolo. You know, it's almost been a case of, you know, he's in the 25-man squad, but he's very much there to make up the numbers. And I think, you know, even referencing an interview himself, didn't he? He's like, there's a group of players that have hardly had a kick this season, but when called upon, they're there. And Harry Toffolo's never let anyone down in a Forest shirt. I actually thought he was one of the players who came out, you know, certain spells last season with a fair bit of credit in the bank. And yeah, look, if Forest has to go on this journey and become the club that the owner wants Forest to be, then Harry Toffolo might not have a starring role to play in that in future. But I mean, Harry Toffolo is a brilliant player to have in the squad. He obviously loves being at the club. He talked in his interview, and he's quoted, and he posted on socials that, you know, he loves representing Forest, he loves wearing the badge, and yeah, a lot of players say that, but you actually feel that for Harry Toffolo, it's a real privilege for him to be playing in the Premier League at a club like Forest. And he didn't let anyone down. And I think, look, if the injuries and Nir Carter is obviously now suspended, I'd have no problems with throwing Harry Toffolo into a starting 11 at Palace. Absolutely not. I think he'll definitely not let you down, and he'll get forwards. The one thing that we always said about Harry Toffolo when he was at Huddersfield, that he was a great left wing back, getting forward, scoring goals. It's not happened for him necessarily at Premier League level, but he's definitely got a bit to add. And I just love that when he came on yesterday and he got stuck in and he gave his all. I think that's the environment. That's the, you know, back to the culture and the spirit piece. But he pretty much, Harry Toffolo yesterday epitomised that, didn't he? I thought it was really good to see. He'll be chuffed with his performance because he played well as well when he came on.
Yeah, I suspect he'll, you know, if people aren't back, and even if they are starting to get back fit, They might be rested again for the next game. I suspect he might be in that 11 versus Palace. Let's see what happens. But yeah, you know, he's done himself no harm. And there's nothing wrong with this idea. You know, Forest are getting better. They're getting better players. So the likes of Harry Toffolo, they won't be here for long. I think with Toffolo, it's a bit of a different one because of the circumstances, obviously, of what, you know, the betting rules and that came out in the summer.
Would not have gone amiss on Brentford, as you were quite rightly pointed out to me yesterday as well. Yeah,
that wouldn't have gone amiss at all. But there's nothing wrong with having reliable players in your squad. Yeah. You know, your squad doesn't have to be filled with, you know, Mr. Dynamo, Mr. You know, likes to score long range goals, whatever it is. You know, players from Brazil and what's not. You know, I look at Newcastle, for example, and it always, you know, surprises me some of the players that they remain in their squad and they're quite happy to have in their squad. You know, players like Sean Longstaff, who start for them. You know, players like Matty Target, Paul Dummett and Jacob Murphy. You know, like, all these players are playing a part in that Newcastle team, regardless of people thinking, well, they're not quite a top four team that you're saying at the moment, Tom, but they are. You know, they're playing Champions League football this season, and all those players, some of them, I would say, you know, if Forest were linked with him, our fans would be like, oh, really? You know, they're playing Champions League football at the moment, and I think that just goes to show, yeah, they've got the likes of Bruno and, you know, Isaac and stuff like that, but they've got reliable players they can lean on at times in games when they just need to get players that they know will perform at a certain level if those players are having off days or whatever it is. And there's nothing wrong with having Harry Toffolo, who has yet to put much of a foot wrong. Yes, he's not going to be in the England squad anytime soon, but you know, he is doing a job for Forest, and sometimes that is enough. So certain other players have come in and they've unfortunately not played to the standard that we need. But Harry Toffolo has done that against Brentford. And if he comes in against Palace and he does well, what's wrong with that? You know, we don't have to be having players in the team that have all come from Champions League qualified teams or whatever it is. So it's up to him to keep up those performances and show that he's good enough now.
Absolutely. He did himself no harm whatsoever yesterday. 13 minutes out of time yesterday, that did me. I'm not going to lie to you.
With the 13 minutes, to be quite honest. I thought, oh, well, maybe there's an opportunity that will come for Forest, but everyone's opinion seemed to be the opposite.
There was always going to be a decent chunk because there was quite a few stoppages, weren't there, in terms of injuries, etc., and treatment needed. So it was always going to be lengthy. 13 did seem a bit OTT, but yeah, Steve Cooper's reaction, he wasn't happy. I think at that moment, I think he was very much happy to take the point. I was a bit mixed reaction. I didn't really feel Forest were in too much danger, despite obviously, you know, Brentford having a couple of chances, but it was an interesting 13 minutes. Definitely both sides had chances. Forest, obviously, with Origi and Wood combining. I say combining. I think Origi tried to take Wood's head off. But it wouldn't have surprised you if you've got these big noggin on the end of it. But Brentford, obviously, having the chances I alluded to earlier in terms of the one where Murillo gets it off the line. It was a good period of play. But, yeah, I think we were happy when it came to an end, especially that one coming off the line at the end. But Bolly had a chance, didn't he, actually, from a Gibbs White free kick. But look, all in all, as I say, I think it was a good point on reflection. Take it, move on. We talked about. I feel like even throughout this, you know, conversation that we've had tonight, I think there's a lot more positives to take than from negatives. I think the only negatives we're really taken out of it is obviously needing to take our chances when we're on top. And just being a little bit more streetwise and not coming out second half and being so sluggish. But the positives far outweigh it. I think there's you know, we said it after Burnley, that there's plenty to build on there. I actually thought it was a good game of football, probably tainted by the second half. I think it had a bit of everything second half. I just came away with it again just thinking that, you know, Forest, you can see building blocks, you can see Forest progress. You know, are Forest a better side than what they were 12 months ago? Absolutely. Is there still more to come from this Forest squad? Absolutely. So with that in mind and the couple of games that Forest have got coming up now, they need to capitalise on that, which is what you said at the start. But I think all round, I think it was a good afternoon, a good point. Take it. Let's talk about Palace then. Palace up next. Saturday tea time, live on Sky. That's an interesting away journey for those travelling down from Nottingham, given the kickoff time and the train situation, so that one's not really been thought through. Palace have obviously got their own injury concerns. We talked about Brentford. Palace have got a hell of an injury list at the moment, but fair play to them. They went to Old Trafford at the weekend and won 1-0. I don't think many people saw that coming. Their own fans certainly didn't see it coming. So there's a couple of Palace fans that we know were absolutely cock-a-roop on Saturday night with that one. To be fair to Palace, they've had a fairly solid start. Obviously, sat two places above Forest in ninth on 11 points. In terms of the home form results so far this season, they've played three, won one against Wolves, lost one against Arsenal, and drawn one against Fulham. So they've had a bit of everything there. And from afar, what have you made of Palace? Obviously, difficult year for Palace in terms of they're not overly invested in the summer. They've given Roy Hodgson another season. It feels like not that Palace need to consolidate, because they are, you would say, now a very well established Premier League club, but it's kind of one of those seasons that just feels a bit meh. They're not really doing anything. I mean, it's classic Palace, right? Palace have that mid-table spot sewn up every season, but it feels very much like Palace have gone one step further this year and just really wanting to consolidate that mid-table.
Yeah, they seem a bit kind of Mr. Inconsistent, if you like, at the moment. You know, some of the games, the results that they've had so far this season, they've drawn away at Brentford. Fine, okay. Yeah, they've beaten Wolves at home. They've lost at Villa away. I would say a point at home to Fulham at this Fulham side at the moment is a disappointing result. They've had a bit of a mixed bag, I think, I would say, in terms of the results that they've had. And I don't think Roy Hodgson lost the season for me, but let's see what happens there. But they are a squad that have some good young players. You know what I mean? That's kind of their identity. Players that are kind of learning and obviously players that have maybe had a couple of seasons. Again, I talk about this a lot. They've got quite a consistent squad still, you know, albeit they've got the injuries. They've got players that know this level, know the job that they have to do. You know, Eze's now had a couple of seasons at this level. He's a fantastic player. Gehi at centre-back and Anderson, who I rate. So they've got some good players. And obviously, they love Cheick Doucouré, who obviously we had an interest in before. So, you know, it's an interesting squad, but they're just a squad that, you know, you don't feel like they you know, go into games and kind of blow teams away, but they get the job done. And Selhurst Park's a really tough place to go to. It always will be. So I think this is a difficult game for Forest in the circumstances at the moment. But it depends what Palace turn up on the day. And it's whether their players also are on song and are on form to score. I can't touch, well, I don't know whether it's touch wood or not. I could be made to look like a bit of a clown here. I don't think it'll be a big scoring game, is what I think.
Here we go. I think it could be a good game. For this one, do you think, what do Forest do? What does Steve Cooper do? Because the Forest have a way of playing away from home that they've been utilising now over the last few months. We won't go into it because we talk about every pod. But do Forest revert back to that formation, or do they build on the back four, the 4-3-3 formation that we saw at the weekend against Brentford?
I think they'll go back to the back five. I think they'll utilise Gibbs-White a lot in this one. And that would say to me that they probably won't go a 4-3-3 too much, unless they have Gibbs-White roaming around. So I think they'll go back to the back five. There's nothing wrong with that. You don't have to go, we'll only play the back five against Man City and Arsenal and not do it against Palace. If it's working for you away from home, you know, Forest have won one game within that run of games, but they've put in some good performances and could have easily come out with more points and more wins within that really difficult set of fixtures. So I would say stick with it. There's nothing wrong with doing it at a Palace, albeit it could be quite predictable. But if that's what's working for you, then do that. I actually think sometimes the going more attacking in quotation marks at home is becoming a slight downfall a little bit at times when you're putting pressure to do that. I think Forest are still, you know, quite effective at doing what they've done for the last year and a half, which is hitting teams.
Yeah, I'm in two minds with this one. I do agree. And to be honest with you, I expect Forest to play a back three more than not. this season. But I'm in two minds with this one in terms of I liked what I saw yesterday against Brentford at home. And I just wonder whether Palace are a team that if you match them in midfield and you give yourself a chance to get the ball up the pitch and have players who can hurt Palace, whether this is a game that Forest can get. Like you said, they're inconsistent. You don't know what you're going to get with Palace. I'm in two minds in terms of does he stick or twist with this one. I just think maybe
consistency though, you know, you could frustrate them. You know, if you've got that back five, yeah, so inconsistent. So
I just wonder though, in terms of injuries, might play a part here in terms of what Forest decides to do. You know, with the players they've got available, we've talked about Toffolo. Toffolo can fit down that left hand side, no problem. On the right hand side, you know, Aurier again could do you a job. You would probably prefer in those wing-back positions to have Aina on either flank. But it's the back three. You know, is Felipe ready to drop back in? Do you bring Worrell back in? You know, probably harshly been left out of the side for the last couple post-Burnley. It's those type of conversations. I suppose you could bring Worrell back in, put Murillo and Bolly there. Or Murillo on the left-hand side, Bolly in the centre. It looks probably quite balanced, that, as a back three. So he's got options, hasn't he? It wouldn't surprise me if he reverted back to, I think, me personally, I'd like him to stick with the 4-3-3 and keep Hudson, Odoi and Gibbs White on the pitch behind a one Ying and go with a similar back four, albeit probably Toffolo at left back if no one's fit. But look, again, we say it every week, don't we? Cooper's got options here and he's definitely got plenty to play with. In terms of, I mean, give us a prediction then. You said it's going to be a low-scoring game. Give us a Tom Denman prediction.
Not convinced, but I'm going to go 1-1.
Oh, I know you're going to go on the fence there with a 1-1. I'm going to go for Forest this one. I think Forest are going to nick this. I'm going to go Forest 2-1. I fancy this one. I don't know why. I'd love us to win it. We've got a mate of ours who's a Palace fan, and I would love nothing better to beat them at the weekend. But yeah, I think Forest will back up a battling performance at the weekend with 3 points here, and then that'll set up the Luton game nicely for them as well. But I think you'll be watching it in Vegas, which will be interesting for you. So what time's kick off in Vegas?
I don't know, like 9:30.
Does it matter? It doesn't really matter, does it?
Start when in Vegas and all that. Come on,
yeah. So, when in Vegas, yeah, watch Palace Forest. You'll be in some sort of Palace. So fair enough. We'll hope for 3 points for you when you're out there. Let's end on our. We'll do a guess who. Obviously, last week's guess who was really easy. It wasn't even worth doing, was it? Lewis Grabban. Anyone could have got that from the first clue, I think. Right, this week's obviously tedious link to Crystal Palace. So this player has made his name at Palace's arch rivals, Brighton. In his two spells with the Seagulls, he made 259 appearances, scoring 103 goals. He joined Palace on a free transfer from Brighton in 2011, scoring 44 goals in 4 years. He's also had spells at both Reading and Bournemouth, and joined Forest on deadline day in February 2021, scoring 2 goals in 16 appearances, then retiring from the game at the end of that season. Who is that? I think that's quite easy as well, Tom.
That's a really easy one.
I might have to ramp these up a bit. But answers on a postcard. You can obviously tweet us at time added on pod. No, don't do that. Get us at our Twitter handle at time added on pod. You can email us at timeaddedonpod@outlook.com. As always, give us a like, give us a follow on Spotify and Apple, leave a review. Tom, I'm falling to bits tonight, man. I'm still sleep deprived after that drive yesterday. I'm going to go and have a good lie down. And
Have a kip.
That was good. I enjoyed it. Plenty of positives. Even you're still upbeat. So I'm enjoying it. So, everyone going to Palace, good luck on the journey down. Tom, enjoy Vegas. We will look forward to hearing some of your stories on the pod next week. We will be back at what, later? It'll be Tuesday, Wednesday next week when you've fully recovered and got yourself back together. But everyone going down to Palace, enjoy it. Let's hope for 3 points. Come on, you Reds.